Blog Talk Radio.
I don't want to change my name. I got nothing to be ashamed of. Got no secrets from you. I came in the world this way, and I'm going out the same. Going to live my life and die as a Jew. As a Jew. As a Jew. Moses went up on Mount Sinai. Daniel made it through the lion's den. With a little faith in God, they all made it through their troubles, cause a little faith in God will always win. And it's true. And it's true. I got nothing to apologize to you. I'm a son of Abraham. I've been living the promised land. I don't want to change my name. I got nothing to be ashamed of. Got no secrets from you. I came in the world this way, and I'm going out the same. Gonna live my life and die as a Jew. As a Jew. As a Jew. I got nothing to apologize to you. I'm a son of Abraham.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we want to stay alive. And toward Chaim, instructions of life, toward Chesed, instructions of kindness, toward Rachamim. This is now class number 243, consciousness, normative versus super. And again, we seem to be having some trouble here with our being able to transmit via our studio, although I do see we are on the air. As you can see, you just got some feedback there. So we're going to go switch back now to our studio. And let's hopefully have our studio intact in a way that we're fully conscious of how much time is left until the end of the show. Anyway, blessed souls, I'm stroking through a little bit of a virus, which I've had basically the beginning of its last multi-Shabbat after the Shabbat. And we're working our way through it. Been able to work the last 4 days, spending a lot of meditation, praying for healings. Any prayers on your part for my healings would certainly be appreciated. With that being said, we're now standing less than 30 hours approximately here on the eastern coast of Turtle Island, a.k.a. the United States of America, getting ready for Hanukkah. And in the spirit of Hanukkah, we're going to be plucking out inspirations from the Hasidic discourse on Maimar from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Nachum Schneerson. From Tavshin Chavav, which would have been 5726, corresponding to 1965. And those of you who are interested among all the peoples of the world, called Bei Olam, as well as the nation of Israel, if you're not aware of it, we're reading from Parshas Vayeshev in the book of Genesis, chapter 37, verse 1, to chapter 40, verse 23. And with that being said, as well, we hope that you also take note that we'll also be learning from the Haftarah of the prophet, the Navi Amos, or Amos. The name Amos strikes a bell for me because I remember there was a baseball player in the late 60s up until the mid-80s, Amos Otis, who was a great player for the Kansas City Royals, played center field. And that was my first association with the prophet Amos, through the name Amos, the anglicized version of this great center fielder who played alongside future Hall of Famer George Brett. With that being said, now let's try to chime in and vibe out on these matters that are connected to the content which we should share with you, blessed souls. Here we go. Blessed souls, we are constantly surrounded by Ur/light, which is consciousness. There is cognitive consciousness, in the world of psychology, they would call it subconsciousness. In the world of inner dimensions of Torah, Panimata Torah, we call it superconsciousness. Superconsciousness being connected to what is known as the Koach HaMaskil, which is the means by which we are totally supercharged in being aware of the Most High, but in our conscious left brain and back brain thinking, we cannot assimilate at any one point in time all of our superconsciousness as embodied in one of the koichas, the powers, the potentialities in our cognitive thinking, located in the Koach HaMaskil, which, according to the Kabbalistic Hasidic teachings, is located above the membranes, the chromim, which hover over the left back and right brain, which protects the brain from bacteria, which could otherwise cause very lethal consequences. Heaven forbid, we should not know such things. Now, when we start to interact with consciousness, blessed souls, we may very well be interested in accessing and then sharing with others. Then there's levels of consciousness we may want to avoid. And that very consciousness, which in fact could empower us to become more elevated human beings, more intimately connected to our Tzelem Elohim, our divine image, instead of wanting to be empowered, we rely back on our previous frames of reference in our consciousness. And a reaction to that attempt to be empowered, sometimes there's a reaction to share with others that they should also avoid being empowered by such attempts to be supercharged with a higher way of looking at things within the creation according to eternal instructions of the Torah. So therefore, we step back and reflect on the simple, seemingly innocent act of lighting a candle. Now, when that lighting of such a simple matter, say as wax and wick, or as the lighting of candles took place in the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, wick and oil were the primary substances used. Yes, there was a golden candelabra used, but that was just the base by which the olive oil could be supported in order the wick could be placed in the olive oil to be lit. And as well, when we talk about the Beis HaMikdash, and we're talking about being less than 30 hours away from the beginning of the joyous Festival of Lights, we recall a miracle that occurred before the Common Era, more than 2,012 years ago. To note, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, Israel, Eretz Israel, seven candles were lit on a daily basis. Today, the nation of Israel recalls a miracle relating to oil and wicks. By lighting one candle a night, it can be oil and wick, which is the preferable way of doing it. It can also be a wax candle for those who have access only to wax candles. And then each night, according to the performance of this rabbinical enactment, to add each successive night an additional candle until we can actually see before our eyes by the last night of Hanukkah, which will be the following conclusion of Shabbos next week, being today is the English calendar day of December 7th, tomorrow being December 8th, so we'll be on December 15th, we can all actualize and visualize seeing eight glowing, burning, bright candles, wick fueled by olive oil. And again, if those who cannot access the olive oil or other suitable forms of oil, as long as they don't create a smoky appearance when lit or are very smelly, we can use, of course, wax candles as well. That's just a parenthetical statement. So this miracle of which is associated with Hanukkah is a recollection which is also known as we mentioned before in English as the Festival of Lights. Now, while we recall such a time of miraculous extension of the natural resources of fire, cloven material, which becomes the wick, and pure olive oil. And we recall that past their normal net energy efficiency measurements, some distinct differences glare out into the wick and oil, which are allegorically located within our blessed minds, the humble abode of our divine image. Yes, in fact, the inner dimensions of Torah blessed souls indicate that there is an allegorical wick and oil within our own human life experience. The wick is alluding to our soul. Now, our soul would quickly expire from our body if there weren't vessels of our blessed human physical bodily manifestation. And what retains the soul within the body, aside from the voluntary and involuntary bodily processes, are acts of kindness. So oil is likened to acts of kindnesses. What allows the soul to have a proper abode in our blessed bodies is the fact that we can in fact make our souls, and I think you might hear the our cat, Pucci, Mr. Pucci Pooch, whining in the background. So with that being said, we can access more of our soul's potentialities by acts of kindness. That's just a parenthetical statement, but this is something which is brought out in Sefer Tanya, a seminal work whose significance was recalled actually earlier in the week with the Hasidic Yom Tov of Yutes Kislev, was the freeing of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe Shneur Zalman of Liadi. Hope you don't mind the cow purring in the background here. So, with that being said, we want to point out some distinct differences between the seven candles that were lit on a daily basis within the candelabria when the temple had in fact existed. And we will now state them very succinctly and see what type of instruction we can get out of this, and then tie it up with this idea of consciousness, normative versus superconsciousness. Difference number one, as we mentioned, only seven candles were lit, but all were lit each day within the base of Mikdash, the Holy Temple. But when we relate to the menorah of Hanukkah, the first night we light one candle, the second we light two candles, and the third night three, etc., until we get to the eighth night. And by the conclusion of the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah, in contrast to the lighting of the menorah when the temple existed, where at most there would be seven candles, but seven candles were lit every day, there is an actualization of eight candles by the eighth night. Difference number two, the seven candles and lights, or the oros, lit in the base of Mikdash, the Holy Temple, were lit before darkness fell upon that particular day in Jerusalem and Yerushalayim. In contrast, the Hanukkah menorah was lit and will continue to be lit as long as Israel, with the help of the Most High, will continue to observe this festival of lights. We light the Hanukkah menorah only after nightfall, or if you prefer, the night has arisen, to the point where one can clearly see the stars in the sky. The one exception is when we, next Friday, next Erev Shabbat, when we'll be lighting seven candles, a certain amount of time before the time we are allowed to, before Shabbos kicks in, and then we're not allowed to actually light lights to ignite a fire on the Shabbat itself. That's a matter you can see in the halacha, the Jewish code of law. The difference number three, tersely stated, is that the temple lights were lit in an area, which I believe, and perhaps someone can correct me, either by email or a future comment, were lit in an area where only the Kohanim could see them burning. Perhaps some of the Levim could see them, but as far as I know, it was a very private matter, And it was a very, should we say, a very modest means of performing the commandment. And again, I'm not an expert in the dimensions of the first and second temples, or there are some who are studying what will eventually be the third temple designs. I know that there were places where people could sit in an elevated position in the temple if they could see those lights. I'm not sure. But as far as I know, according to my superfrontal understanding, and again, I wait for anyone to clarify me on this, if only the Kohanim or perhaps the Levim would see them burning. However, the Hanukkah menorah, from its very inset, was designed to be placed in a setting where those small but distinguishable lights, those elevating lights, could be seen by all, especially outside of one's home. And the intent of the Hanukkah lights is to broadcast remembrance of those miracles that took place over 2,000 plus years ago, and serves as an existential contemporary instruction, I should say, not construction, instruction, on how to deal with the lack of consciousness, whether on a personal, communal, or international level. Now, that being said, let's go back to these three differences here, distinct differences, and let's try to recapitulate them in another manner. The seven candles that we mentioned earlier in the temple was relating to a type of consciousness which was necessary when Israel was holding on a higher spiritual level. We were full of prophets, we were full of kings, we were full of wise men, we were full of advisors, people engaged in a level of business whereby we nearly had to go about doing what was necessary in order to bring about satisfaction to the Most High and, with that being said, the mere performing of the lighting of the seven candles by the Kohanim was sufficient enough that when we engaged in it, the what was intended was accomplished, to illuminate not only the temple, but also it had a butterfly effect on illuminating the seven natural attributes of the nation of Israel as relate to the emotions of chesed, kindness, gevura, might, restriction, tferes, the synthesis of gevur and chesed, of kindness and restriction or might, netzach, the emotional attribute of carrying out one's healthy emotions into healthy actions, hold the splendor of the manifestation of those emotions into proper actions, yesod, the foundational type of bounty as it manifests into our thoughts, speech, and actions, and then the malchus, until it becomes apparent to someone outside of oneself that the product of one's efforts was done not only just in a healthy cognitive fashion, but in a healthy emotional fashion. So that relates to the lighting of the candles in the temple, and as well, this would affect not only the children of Israel, but would also have a positive effect, and hopefully had made and will continue to make a Kiddush Hashem on Kol Be'olam, on the children of Noah, to see that the nation of Israel is serving as a light to the nations. Of course, that is solely on the condition where we are properly connected, each one according to his or her level, to the Torah of the Most High, the carrying on the Mosaic tradition in a spirit of brotherhood, humility, healthy levels of love, fear, and the synthesis of those two wonderful human emotions, when tapped into properly, bring a lot of goodness into the world. Now, the eight-candled menorah was dealing with the idea that the nation of Israel at that time were weakened. We were downtrodden, yet in a state of being weakened and downtrodden, and even a sizable portion of our people had become Hellenized, had become influenced by the philosophies. Well, we see we got our finally 20 minutes into the show, we got our show with our studio board. When the nation of Israel was in such a situation where we were at a low spiritual level, we were weakened, we were Hellenized, as I just mentioned, we needed to reach more from within ourselves. Now, it didn't come at a mass consciousness level, blessed souls. There were individual acts, which you can learn about, Chanan and his seven sons. There was Yochanan, the Kohen Gadol, the father of Matasyahu and his sons, who would initially lead the rebellion against the Greeks using military tactics, which were, at those times, up until those times, not necessarily employed by the Kohanim, the priestly branch of Israel, while they were engaging in the service of the Second Temple. But they had to reach within themselves and pull out a new level of awareness to deal with that overwhelming level of darkness that had been imposed upon them by the Greek civilization of that time. And Baruch Hashem, they were successful at it. So that is an instruction within our own daily lives today. As we mentioned before, that we're in difference number three, but it really applies to all three central differences of existential contemporary instruction, is that being outnumbered and actually being weaker in numbers is not a sign of defeat. But it can actually serve as a catalyst for eventually victory over adversarial forces, which seems to overwhelm us from all sides, politically, economically, culturally, or any other means they wish to use upon us. Historically, we've overcome those differences, and we've also seen within freedom movements in Africa, in Europe, and the Middle East, and even in America, what started as the few and the weak became eventually the mighty and the conquerors. Look at the civil rights movement in America. Those seemingly media-biased views of the civil rights movement in the 1960s cannot be disconnected to the presidency of President Obama, nor can we disconnect the victory in 1948 of the small, tiny state of even many of those Jews being Hellenized Jews after 2,000 plus years of exile, still being able to defeat because they stood in unity for the cause of Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel, even though it is not true Jewish sovereignty until the Mashiach comes. We openly acknowledge that. And again, we remind everyone that we are not Zionists. We're not anti-Zionists, but we wish for an upgrade, as well as upgrading of our own consciousness, that when we talk about Zionist ideals, we're talking about Torah ideals and not about taking in the viewpoints of the nations and saying this is Zionism and just putting a Jewish twist on it. That's a distortion of what a Zionist is in the Torah sense. A Zionist in the Jewish sense, Torah sense, is one who wants to reveal the Etzem and Neshama, their true soul essence, in order to fulfill the Creator's will to make a Dera Patachtoni. That being said, difference number two, that the seven candles that were lit up in the base of Migdash were lit up before darkness. Again, because when things were normative and the nation of Israel had the prophets and the kings and the wise men, the mystics, you want to say, the whole smorgasbord of spirituality, the normal level of light, which at some level was suckling from light that's higher than all forms of cause and effect relationships, was feeding through. And we see that the first temple was dedicated by King Solomon. And this was a Shlomo HaMelech, and a king whose name was indicative of his reign. It was a reign of peace. There was no war in his reign because of his exalted level of Chachmah, of wisdom, which is a conduit, a mimutz, an intermediary between levels of consciousness above all cause and effect relationship, and the channel down into explanations into his various teachings that we are aware of, such as Proverbs and Song of Songs, which are all giving us some idea that higher wisdoms can be transmitted to the simplest wisdoms that the masses, including ourselves, I mean myself, Donzus Yagubin, can access to grow. As Solomon said, I came to give the foolish wisdom. But that from where that wisdom came from, this is a place that's way above all cause and effect relationships. But in the Hanukkah menorah was lit, is lit, and will always be lit after nightfall, except from, again, when we talk about before Shabbos, like say like next Friday afternoon, because it has to be clear that even in the immense darkness that surrounds us in terms of lack of consciousness, will it be on an individual basis, a communal basis, international basis, that the reminder for all human beings that one, the igniting of one soul, of one level of consciousness, in the vast abyss of lack of proper mass consciousness, and say the lack of proper what they call Zeitgeist, whatever you want to call it. I'm not even concerned. I don't pronounce the word right. I just was looking up the definition the other day and was amused by the whole idea, because the Rambam talks about this in the laws of the foundations of the Torah in terms of chapter 7, that the prophet doesn't go after the darkness of the times. And we see when people have gone after the darkness of the time they lived in, we had World War I, World War II, we have the current world crisis, because there's a lack of knowledge of pristine godliness. And this is not something where we can go around pointing our fingers at others. We have to start with ourselves, but it starts with the lighting of a single candle, trying to reach into that level of consciousness of godliness, which is afforded us, blessed souls, that's the good news, by the inner dimensions of Torah, to see beyond all cause and effect relationships, and then hopefully to grow in this level of consciousness of that which is above cause and effect relationships of the Most High, and everything fits into place, all the pieces of the spiritual puzzle to this creation, or this earth, which is like to a mustard seed to the rest of creation, everything will be in sync, and there are no more contradictions. And ultimately, this will lead to the revelation of the Mashiach, the Messiah, who will relieve the Torah Chaim, the instructions of life that have never still been accessed by human beings, even by the greatest prophets of Moses and his descendant, or say his descendancy being the king of all prophets of Israel, and the prophets of the children of all, even the children of men, those prophets who preceded the great Tzaddik Noah. Last one, that, excuse me, the temple lights were lit in an area, which again I'm presupposing, and again I didn't have a chance to review some of the instructions about the temple, but again, as far as I know, where the temple lights were lit was an area only where I know that a standard Israelite, so to speak, the layman branch of our people, which I am a part of as an Israelite, could not go in. Perhaps a Levi, a Levite could be, who worked in part with the Kohanim in the maintenance of the Holy Temple, and will work with the Kohanim with the rebuilding speedily in the days of the Third Temple, that this was a private matter. It was a matter of modesty. Why was it a matter of modesty? Because it was such a great act to engage in a Torah commandment that the Most High told Moses to tell Aaron and his sons that forever they should be lighting the temple lights. And it wasn't just to light, because after all, there was plenty of light in Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, with the gathering of the sages, the gathering of the Kol Be'olam. People would come to pay homage to the Most High and pray there. Remember, King Solomon made a prayer when he dedicated the first temple to accept the prayer of the of all the Gentile nations, of all the children of Noah, which is something that people should review. And if you have a chance to go to the Holy Land, offer up your prayers. You can even call in certain websites or send emails to ask that your prayers be put in there. And then do your own little experiment, blessed soul. See if you offer up a prayer at the Western Wall, if you have that merit. Or you can send an email that a prayer be inserted into the Western Wall. See, judge with your own casual and yet hopefully objective eye if the prayer is answered, and say, hey, was this just something that Donzus Yagubin suggested to me? Or was this, you know, this is what King Solomon would prayed about, and with a prophetical insight was offering a means to empower the children of Noah. Something to think about, blessed souls. But the Hanukkah menorah, in contrast, was designated to be placed in the setting again, where the light can be seen outwardly. In fact, if you go to Israel, if you have the chance, I bless all of you who can, to go to Israel, even you still have a chance now, even before the holiday concludes, to fly out there and see in many places where it is safe enough to place it, because there could be alleyways or certain neighborhoods where it might not be as safe, but where people are able to, you see many people in Israel, when they have the opportunity, will light their menorah outside, and and even in Israel and out in places outside in the diaspora of the nation of Israel, you see that there are public menorah lightings. This whole idea is to broadcast publicly a miracle occurred. Not only was there a defeating of our enemies, the Greeks of those days, when the Greeks are not our enemies today. In fact, they're not even the same, it's not the same people, because Sennacherib had mixed up the peoples from during the time of this first temple, which was unfortunately an unfortunate occurrence following the, so to speak, spiritual and at times to our great pain, a civil war that took place between the 10 tribes of Israel and the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. Now, with that being said, you see that there is promotion of the idea of promoting the idea of a miracle in a public fashion, with no shame. And I guess that's why we played "Not Ashamed" by the late great guitarist and songwriter Moshe Yes with his accompanying partner. Moshe Levine, because Hanukkah is a time not only for Jewish people not to be ashamed, but any people of any form of spirituality where growth is encouraged to connect to the Most High and to fellowship with other people, it is a time for all of us to consider the idea that the weak can conquer the strong, the few can defeat the many, as long as the few are aiming at a universal consciousness which is beyond all cause and effect relationships. Now, perhaps my reasoning might seem a little ethereal to you. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm encouraging you to explore these words that I'm offering with you. And, you know, sometimes it's not easy to get the right words out at the right time to the right people. But we're going to conclude now succinctly with a beautiful song, which I think is in the spirit of Hanukkah. More than a week ago, a blessed brother from England, David Dohm, had composed a song that I had played already. I apologize, I don't remember this song, although it was a wonderful song. But this song, he composed, I think. And if he composed a while back, I apologize to him. Again, I'm still getting over my virus, so I'm not clicking on all cylinders. This is a song called "The Right Words" by David Dohm. You know, sometimes we don't have the right words, and perhaps I didn't have all the right words today. But I tried to at least express to you and share with you, blessed souls, that there is consciousness, normative versus superconsciousness. Normative is wonderful when things are going right. Right now, things are not going as right as they should be in the world, because in a world of plenty, in the world of information, where technology is going deeper and deeper, and yet people on another level are becoming more self-concerning instead of more universal in outlook. And when they express the universal outlook, they're being attacked for being perhaps traitorous or undermining the sovereignty of their own native countries. But we need something to glue together universal thinkers. And the universal eternal instructions of the Torah are there to provide us with accessing Panimius Torah, blessed souls, the inner dimensions of Torah. And there's the teachings of Chabad Hasidus, you have the Zohar, you have Kabbalah, you have Rabbi Nachman Bezel Hasidus, you also have Ger Hasidus. You have to do your research. That's what all I can say to you, blessed souls. You don't have to take me as the gospel truth. I am not the light in the way. I am just one person, one small, hopefully humble Torah activist, trying to share with you words coming from the heart. But I want to share with you now, as we conclude the show now, "The Right Words" by David Dohm, to hopefully open our hearts, to meditate upon these words, and that we should find the right way to speak the right words at the right time to the right people, to open up universal consciousness in order that we can generate Ahava Chad, one love, Gorel Chad, one destiny kolonu for all of us, Bardarchi Shalom, in a peaceful, Darchi Noam, and in a pleasant way, Bekarav Yemeinu, speedily in our days, with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, our righteous Messiah, who will roar out, Torah Chadasha, insights into divine instruction prophetically and in a means that will be accessible to our seichel anusha, human intellect, that is intimately connected with our tzelem elokim, our divine image, which will help us give out in scrimmage and realize it is no dream to live the reality of a world of no hatred, no jealousy, no unnecessary competition, which is what we will see in the days of Mashiach. Anything less than that is still plain old bitter gullus, exile, which is why we have to light the candles every Friday night, our Israelite women do, and our Israelite people light the menorah starting this Motzei Shabbat after Shabbos, to illuminate the world with a remembrance that, again, weakness can ultimately be a source of strength. Take care, everyone.
Open my heart to receive your light. 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 Thank you.